I let you down again.
Joint House Senate Special Committee on Legislative Reform will come to order. It's April 14th. Members present. All let the record show that all members are present. All six of us. Tomorrow morning, both the House and the Senate will be introducing conflict of interest legislation as approved in our last meeting the day before yesterday.
Will it pass tomorrow too? Or
I hope so. I don't know.
I hope it does. Then we can start taking a $100 bribe.
If the committee members would turn to a 3-page bill dealing with the code of ethics, we can start on that and discuss the merits or demerits of this proposal. I'll just give the committee a few minutes here to read it, and unless you haven't had a chance, unless you're ready before.
Is it your intention to have this introduced tomorrow also, or do we have some time on it? Are we going out of business tomorrow? What's the deal?
Yes, we are.
Yes.
You are.
Yes. It's my intent, anyway, to introduce this, the conflict of interest, and the uniform rules. We can get it all.
Do you want to talk about the demerits first or the merits?
Well, I thought we'd go down to the overall bill, or
do you want to talk about the demerits second? First or the merits first?
It doesn't matter, Senator. Okay, let's start with 010 on page 1, dealing with the Code of Ethics proposed work draft. Now, in case you're wondering where this came from, this draft came from the United States Congress. I know.
Gee, they have a terrific track record.
That's a stupid outfit.
Mr. Bradley, would you take the witness stand here, because we're going to surely have some questions.
It's still warm.
Mm-hmm. Good. Senator Josephson, let's start with the demerits first on 010. How about the merits?
Let's not worry about the merits if we don't have any objections.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
How about 020? Senator Fake, Senator Joseph,
and then Section
Kelly.
9, expose corruption whenever discovered. It's about the meetings I go to every morning at 8:30 in Senate Finance. Do I have to expose those?
Senator, if you want a motion to delete it, sure, I'll entertain it. Senator Josephson.
And it shall be my duty as district attorney.
To prosecute, right?
Not only to prosecute, but also do uphold those principles. Richard, are these consistent with the bill we're reporting tomorrow? I mean, is there anything like the language engage in no business with the state, either directly or indirectly, that is inconsistent with the conscientious performance of official or assigned duties? I don't see any problem with that, but there's nothing in here that has us saying two different things.
I wonder if we couldn't.
We had a mesh together after we approved it.
I wonder if we could put a citation in there inconsistent with whatever that statute is, if we're coming through the conflict of interest, inconsistent with 3905.721.
Oh, you mean here in this bill?
This is kind of like a Boy Scout.
That's what it is.
I think it should be Girl Scout.
Mr. Chairman, on line 2A, use no information coming to the public officer or employee in the performance of government duties as a means of making progress. Haven't we used confidential information isn't that the standard, confidential information? You get a lot of information that comes to you like it comes to any other member of the public. Isn't the standard confidential information?
I think you're right, Senator.
I don't have any. I don't think I've ever been privy to any information.
That was confidential?
I'm sure there are some. I don't know. I suspect there are some in the Finance Committee. I don't know. I've never run across any confidential information. Probably, any information. I don't know. But I would move that we insert the word confidential prior to information.
Senator Kelly's moved to insert on page 2, line 2, after the word no.
Well,
the word confidential. There's an objection. Senator Josephson?
No, I object because I think the problem is that information might not be confidential in the sense that sophisticated people could ferret it out. But, for example, if you knew that one of the options that the state has is to build a prison at Anderson, and you went out and gobbled up, it's an option. And you also thought that there was a good chance of that happening and went out and gobbled up land in the area, that would be the, it really wouldn't be confidential, but it would be information that the normal people who are not in the legislature would not have on their own.
Okay. Discussion?
I agree. I think that to use the word confidential, it would be to make it not restricted enough. There are all kinds of information available to us as legislators that is not available to the general public. Now, what the public demand or the commission demand is that information not be used to our benefit.
Well, I'm not going to, how can you disagree with that, Barbara?
That's what I thought. That's
yeah,
what
it's
I
difficult
said.
To disagree with. My point is that we could be sitting in a public meeting attended by the press and God and everybody, and somebody says we're going to build this prison out in Sutton, and that means we can't go out and buy property out in Sutton where everybody else can.
I would suggest to you that you probably shouldn't.
Senator Josephson.
This is very much akin to the episode that is in the courts, the claim that a member, knowing that a certain facility was needed, invested in the facility to prepare himself or his partners. I think we should stay away from that.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Miller?
Two observations. First of all, of course, I made a good profit by investing in gold at the same time. But that's facetious. Mr. Chairman, isn't this covered already in the conflict of interest law that we passed?
That's the way I view it.
Then why do we even need an amendment? I don't know that we need to have it covered in both bases. I see this as sort of the standards of conduct, and the other has a specific prohibition against using inside information. I think it's.
Maybe I'm just a little redundant. This code is in reflection with the conflict of interest.
Well,
it's whatever the it's the pleasures of the committee, whatever they want on this particular item.
I mean, this is Mr. Chairman. This is a sort of bill that you get into sort of personal relationships, or not personal relationships, but personal. Standards. For instance, expose corruption wherever you discover it, and seek quite more efficiently kind of ways of task accomplished. But this section 8 here on the information that the officer employee that comes by, that's already covered in sort of the nuts and bolts conflict of interest that we passed. So I don't think that we ought to be running two sets of things to figure if they're not going to be identical.
Do you want to amend Senator Kelly's amendment then?
Well, I was moved late to delete section 8.
Okay, we had a motion. Senator Kelly, would you withdraw your motion?
Of course.
Okay. Mr. Miller.
I'll move to delete section 8.
Discussion?
Well,
Senator Josephson?
Yeah. Isn't it valuable, Mike, to have one place where people can look to see what the precepts of ethical conduct are instead of two? I mean, I think that for people who contemplate running for office or people who question whether we're doing proper things, the whole value of this bill, which is just kind of, it's kind of sets a norm of what the standard ought to be, is that, you can debate whether or not you fall into this, and to say to someone, well, it's in the other thing, I'm not really as happy about that.
Well, by the same token, we probably ought to include, we will not accept gifts or prizes. That's the true cheerful, first of all. I just don't think we have to know.
Mr. Chairman, I just have to say that they're two separate documents. If we accept that they are two separate documents and that we need them both, we can't incorporate or don't choose to incorporate everything in this code of ethics in this this bill on the ethics commission and establishing them and other conduct code, then I think we need to look at this separately. And I think that, like Mr. Senator Josephson says, this is kind of a Boy Scout oath, if you will. This is one place where people who are thinking about running for office can go. They're not wondering about if they have a conflict or whether a commission will think they have one. They are just actually looking at, this is what's expected of me if I'm going to hold public office in the state of Alaska. And I think that we shouldn't need to put in here that the gift but I see nothing wrong with accepting this as it is.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't sense a rampant agreement on this. All is brought back.
What about?
I will note that we've taken that out of your royalty. We have 10 commandments, so that's what it's
good. Good.
Mr. Chairman, I move with the exception of 010.
Any objection? Okay. Motion passes. Now we'll look at page 2, line 8, dealing with 020, conduct of a legislator. Senator Josephson.
Are there any sanctions for not not adhering to the conduct of a legislator in 020?
I purposely left that out because I think we'll discuss that at the end.
I'd like to know that now. Before I agree to the text. And the reason I say, because I'm always a little worried about the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And by golly, I'd hate to have somebody say, well, no, he didn't do that, but the spirit was broken. I mean, I don't mind that as part of the Boy Scout oath, and we'll all do our best, but I do mind it if it's suddenly going to become a question of expelling a member from the Senate, because there's no literal violation of the rules, but we don't think the spirit was...
Well, Senator, just an intent of the chair to have some simple code of ethics that we, all six of us, can at least agree on. You don't want any penalties, that's fine with me. I think we ought to work on a code that we think the legislature will accept as a code of conduct here. Senator Kelly.
Well,
so I'm just saying,
I'm just wondering why you want to put this in statute. I would think that this belongs as a preamble to the uniform rules or something of that nature, or accepted as a code of ethics for the legislature. I don't know why you want to put it in the statute. You know, the statutes, most of this stuff is covered, a lot of this is covered in the bill that we've just been working on. You know, other stuff is covered other words. This is just kind of a, you know, as Joe was saying, this is just kind of a general thou shalt not and thou shalt. And it just seems to me that where we really need this is somewhere within the legislative branch in front of the uniform rules of the preamble, or something of that nature, just rather than in statute.
Good point. Okay, then what's the feeling of the committee? Should this be in the rules? Because we do have, the next item we're taking up is the uniform rules. We can incorporate it, this code with the rules, as suggested to the legislature to adopt. Senator Josephson.
I would have no problem with having it in the rules. I would also have no problem with perhaps having some kind of written oath, supplementing the oath we take. When you're sworn in, it says that you will not
accept favors or benefits in our elected form. Make that a requirement of the office.
Let me ask Mr. Brad, like, can that be done?
Can you do what?
Put this in uniform rules.
Oh, I see. Well, I would say that the Boy Scout aspect sort of ceased with Section 20. I think that 30 and on become a bit more substantive.
Mr. Chairman, the 1 through 10 and 010 are appropriate for the, in front of the uniform rules, I would think, but I agree with Mr. Bradley that there are definite thou shalt nots in from 030 on, specific things.
What we could do is take the provisions that fit and adopt it by concurrent resolution in both houses and have it printed in the same booklet that where the uniform rules are printed. So so we don't have to renumber the uniform rules, but it'll be printed on the inside cover or printed on the front page in the uniform rules, something like that. But we will have established a code of ethics adopted by both houses.
Senator Halford.
Yeah, I just want to say something specifically on Code 2.0. You're saying the Ten Commandments expose corruption wherever discovered in Code 2.0A, so engage in conduct that reflects credibility on the legislature. At times, investigation doesn't reflect credibility on the legislature. There's a direct conflict in the Ninth Commandment in Code 2.0, worded as they are now.
Well, I wouldn't read reflect creditably to mean that you have to participate in the cover-up of wrongdoing. I mean, there is that theory always that you hear, well, don't say anything because the public will not like the legislative branch if you reveal that. But I hope that's not what is meant by 020.
Well, Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, let me make a suggestion to get us off the mark here.
Right, go ahead.
That we take Section 2460.010 and put that into a separate concurrent resolution. That hopefully would be adopted by both houses and printed printed along with the uniform rule.
Is that form of the motion?
I would so move. And now as we go through it, we might want to add other stuff to that, or the other stuff could go somewhere else. But I would so move.
Is there objection or discussion?
Well,
I'd
like to discuss it more as to how, if we're going to have some statute, maybe we might as well do the whole thing by statute.
Yeah. That's what I was... I would think it'd be pretty awkward here. We have the, if I can use the words loosely, the Ten Commandments, and then we're getting down to campaign funds and fundraising and use of personal staff, compensation, discrimination, and so on and so forth.
It's all covered someplace else.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Kelly.
Let me try again.
Okay.
What I would do is, on conduct of the legislator A, I put A above the beginning of it, okay?
Okay, for a new bill.
On a resolution that the legislature would adopt. So I would incorporate 20 into 10, and I'd probably put paragraph A above general precepts. I mean, a member of the legislature shall all times engage in conduct that reflects credibility on the legislature, and 1, and 2, and 3.
There you go. That's good.
Okay. And then we get down to campaign funds. But I think some of this stuff
can be in the uniform rules, or at least...
I think some of this stuff should be in statute, but it just seems to me that some of this stuff doesn't fit with the first two sections.
Okay. Representative Locker.
Isn't Section 030 campaign funds already in APOC statute? And certainly some of these other things are already in the conflict of interest bill that we've passed.
I agree with that. It may be there by implication. But it's not, it is clearly not explicit.
Oh.
Senator Page.
Well, in that case, I'd like it in statute.
Okay, but where it really belongs is in the
APOC
statute.
Yes.
Or the tax statute.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't.
Mr. Miller.
Well, as a matter of fact, we're going much beyond the APOC statute. According to the APOC statute, campaign disclosure statutes, what you do with campaign funds after the election is over is completely your own business. You can co-mix them, you can set up a separate account, you can go to Hawaii, you can do anything as you want to.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's what you get when you have a deficit.
For tax purposes, federal tax purposes.
Yeah, you have to report it, yeah. But in any case, so and what this suggests is, maybe not a bad idea, but we should be very much aware that we're making a
major change.
In the APOC statement, and I am a little bit worried about doing it without having all that other language in front of us and not having some commentary from the commission itself. And I'm a little bit confused about what it means when it says a member of the they expend no funds from the campaign account not attributable to a bona fide campaign purpose. When, for instance, a person might end up an election loser, but with, let's say, $400 left over, or what, other than a consolation party or something like that, what other bona fide activity can you put that money to? I guess you could give it to some other guy, somebody else's campaign for next year.
Yeah.
But, or we can return it, I guess.
Senator Joseph.
You didn't get that from the Congress of the United States, I'm sure of that. Because they use campaign funds, I think, for special events, entertainment, mailings to their constituents that are not franked. Am I wrong? That is a major policy issue. And it could not be, you know, you could be an incumbent who does not plan to run ever again. You have a $500 surplus, and it's not really quite clear what you do.
Is this our last meeting?
I think so.
And then, indeed. A member of the legislature may not use appropriated funds or state supplies and equipment merely for campaign activity. It bothers me because it implies that you can use it for campaign activity and something else.
Can you hear
someone check this against the
bill?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be.
Let me try this again, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
We take conduct of the legislator A,
right,
put it in front of
010.
And actually, it should say a member of the legislature shall at all times engage in conduct that reflects credibility on the legislature. Mm-hmm. And then the next sentence should be a person in the legislative branch. So that also includes all of our employees. Okay. And then let's introduce that as a resolution.
Good.
And in the resolution, it would state that it would be printed in the same Code of Ethics, and it will be printed in the uniform rules, in the same booklet or whatever. And then, if you want to do anything on these other things, then put them where they belong in statute. But I don't think we have time. If this is our last meeting, we're not going to be able to do that. So it's going to take individual. I can't see anything else in here that kind of goes along with the ethics code.
What about 070?
Yeah, I can see that.
070, I think, would be terrific in the ethics code.
Yeah, you suggesting?
I don't understand it, but I can see it.
Senator Wilson. Senator Kelly, would you also include 070 as part of that?
Yes.
Ten Commandments.
Oh, I.
Senator Wilson.
I would like to see, if we're going to print it in the uniform rules, I would like to see that oath given by the Lieutenant Governor's office to all candidates for the legislature at the time of filing. So that as you know what your the obligations are.
Okay. Is that in the form of a motion, Mr. Kelly?
Yes,
and would you restate that for us?
Well, I would say that we introduce a concurrent resolution
It starts out to the effect of a member, conduct of the legislator, a member of the legislature shall at all times engage in conduct that reflects credibility on the legislature, then move over, and then the next sentence is a person in the legislative branch should list everything in 010, and go to the, and then also add 070, official business of the legislature. But I think it should be done in a manner that, I don't think it should be written like statute per se, you know, but it should be done kind of almost in longhand.
It's code of ethics.
Ethical, you know, it should be listed in a different way than this is.
Is it going to be a uniform rule?
Yes.
It would not be a rule per se.
It'll be like,
it's the legislative code of ethics that would be printed.
Be like something like this.
A long list of uniform rules. It would be printed.
If you get a pass.
But
plus the oath.
Let me address a very important question. If, correct me if I'm wrong, but on this, I thought that if you, can you be expelled from the legislature for violating a rule?
I don't think once due process has been given to you, you can be expelled for anything.
Okay, so if we do it Senator Kelly's way, the legislature could still impose sanctions on a member who did not comply with these standards.
Or I assume these are common law standards.
We can do that right now. The legislature is the judge
of conduct.
Of its own membership. Anybody at any time can be expelled from this body for 14 votes and 20 seconds.
Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, I'm on that motion. Nobody kind of likes 070.
No, he doesn't.
But I don't understand what 070 is seeking to do. I'm not aware of anybody ever abusing. And I don't know what this means when it says you can't use the phrase last answer of any of the last senator or a variant without proper authority in the Senate for official business. What's proper authority? Is the speaker going to have to give us permission to be introduced and benefit? Is
the
House of Representatives, member of the House of Representatives? I don't know. I'm not aware that anybody's ever used this regulation.
Representative Miller, I guess I've seen it abused. I've heard it abused. I've heard phone calls for tickets to airlines or whatever, just and the word a senator or representative used to get a little faster service or to go to the head of the line or...
Wait a minute, are you saying when you call up to the person to go up to Anchorage, can't say this is representative?
I'm saying if you've got official business up there, that's fine. But I'm talking about, say, in the summer or whatever. There's private use. There's absolutely no official contact at all used. I think it's good for the committee to talk about that. I've seen it enough. It's always been kind of it'll click in my head that, geez, that's using that title for personal gain, for personal convenience
almost. That's in Alaska, when people do that sort of thing, they don't get to keep the title.
I would like to ask Senator Fakes, are you suggesting, Senator Fakes, then when we are not in session, doing the state's business, that I am no longer Representative Longhouse?
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay, so I guess then I would need to know how you could define this. I mean, if I could never be Representative Locker, I can deal with that. But if I can only be Representative Locker, if it appears to somebody that I'm not using it to get to the head of the line or get my tickets faster, I'm concerned, because who's that somebody going to make that decision? I mean, it's easy for me to not be Representative Locker when I'm not here. That I can deal with, but to have this little vague thing out there, that someone's going to make a decision on whether or not
I'm... All right, let's make it real simple, if I may, Mr. Chairman. If I want to get American Express credit card, mm-hmm. I write them and make sure my application's on my letterhead. I pay my gas bill in Anchorage, make sure that my envelope is my legislative envelope. I mean, it just happened to be there. It was real easy. I mean, why not?
But that's...
Senator...
There's an area here where...
All right.
There was a case once of a legislator who allegedly, and I stress that word, used official legislative stationery to correspond with the president of the University of Alaska about a contracting job. And I saw that
I say allegedly, if I saw a Xerox of that, and I thought that was pretty shocking. Incidentally, the legislature was in session. I think is illegitimate and contrary to public interest. But I think the kind of things that you've mentioned are poor taste, but not really. I mean, we could get awfully diverted with that. I think that's.
Mr. Bradley.
I suppose I have to admit that the section is poorly drafted if it's susceptible to this interpretation, because I think in context, the U.S. House of Representatives rule is clearly talking about the use of stationery of that kind. That's what it's seeking to address. I don't think it's seeking to address what you're concerned about at all. Now, if it's susceptible to that interpretation, then it's poorly drafted.
It's not a violation of the Hippocratic Oath for someone to call the Yanceys and say, this is Dr. Smith, and I'd like a table by the window. I don't see why we should be worried about calling up and saying that this is Senator Fakes, and I'm having a dinner party for four people. Could I get a nice table? I mean, maybe in the egalitarian world you favor, Senator, that shouldn't be done, but I don't really think that's...
Sure, this is another example. In Juneau, incredibly, there are four Mike Millers. Sometimes there have been even more, but right now there are four adult Mike Millers. So that people know who to call for a meeting when they want to call me. I have REP written instead of in front of my name, so Rep Mike Miller. And I didn't do that for several years, and I had lots of complaints that people have to go through four Mike Millers before they finally got to the one that...
now you got two in the legislature.
Yeah, now we've got two in the legislature. That's a separate problem. But I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could list myself as Rep Mike Miller on the phone under this rule, at least if I wanted to. I don't think anybody's going to prosecute me.
I think that's your official capacity, though, in a phone book like that.
Well, if I grew up to Anchorage, I'm not going to call it to say this, but I'm not going to go to Anchorage and start the business, but I'm still Rep Mike Miller. Particularly, he's probably let it out that way because I don't matter to something.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that if we can't agree in this committee, that let's stick to what we can agree on and get something in tomorrow, because it's our last meeting, and if we have problems here, then we're going to have problems getting this whole thing through anyway, and the object is to get something through.
One more thing. I think that we have allowed Senator Fakes to somehow mislead us. This doesn't address what she says. This doesn't say that I can't be Representative Walker at all. It says I can't use the phrases legislature of the state of Alaska or Alaska House of Representatives or something.
I never said
altogether.
That. I said right. Stationary.
We got carried away.
Yeah, you guys did. You guys took it all. I never said that. Okay. I was sticking with these phrases right here. Basically,
the Representative Walker.
I shouldn't have used the call-up thing.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Kelly. Would you restate the motion?
My motion is I want to drop 070 out, and if somebody wants to put it in later in committee, come up with good language, fine.
Okay.
So
Senator,
my motion is stands dropping out 070.
Senator Josephson.
I would like to keep 070, but refine it to printed materials containing the phrases.
Okay. I'll live with that.
Well, I've got a couple problems. Number one, it doesn't belong. It's not at the same level as the code of ethics. I mean, this is a minor thing. It's not on the same level as these other principles. It's not a principle. It's a ticky-tack little thing. Okay, that's why I object to it. And I'm not. Who the hell wants to take an oath about using printed stationery?
Rick, you've got two kinds of
stationery
in this process. One, you've got committee stationery, which you can get printed. State expense, or you've got office stationery for specific offices in the legislative process that the state pays for. That should all say official business on it. And you don't own that. You haven't got the right to use that for any personal business. Anybody else goes out and buys their stationery. I still got stationery that says Representative Rick Halford on it. I send it to my family to get rid of it when I'm writing a letter to my mother. Who the hell cares? It's not paid for by the state of Alaska. It's part of an allowance which all of us overspend substantially, put our own money into dealing with the constituents. It's the official business that's paid for by the state, and that's misuse of state property when you use that station.
So that's already covered.
I think we better have a finality to this, because we, you know, we got a long ways off here and it's dealing with uniform rules, I'm sure. And some discussion.
There's no controversy there.
No controversy. Okay, Senator Kelly, state your motion, please, and we'll vote.
We take 24-6-0-020, paragraph A, place it in front of, get rid of the title, just call it Legislative Code of Ethics. Place it in front of 010, mm-hmm. and then it goes, a person in the legislative branch should, and then run out to number 10. And put an oath thing in there, but we'll take the, put a requirement for an oath in there that, so that everybody is aware of what this said. I don't know. My conception is that somebody would read this and then everybody would swear to it. Something like that, Joe?
Yeah.
All right. So put a requirement that it would be included. It would be included.
I'd like to see it as a, can we constitutionally do that? As a requirement of the office? What?
Or you should? Or we could require that the president read this to everybody upon election to the chair.
Yeah, that's fine.
The presiding officer will, or the, that this will be, a, upon the organization of each legislature, this will be read aloud
Lieutenant
to
Governor.
Each house. And it could be read by the Secretary of the Senate or the clerk's office or something.
Well, the Lieutenant Governor.
So that everybody's aware of it.
And it's well, a, Tim, the Lieutenant Governor can do this when you're smart.
I don't want Lieutenant Governor reading this stuff. As long as it's read to all of the members upon organization.
Okay.
Okay, and an effective date, it seems to me that this should go into effect the same time that the other stuff goes into effect, to let everybody get used to it. If you can't abide by this, it gives you plenty of time to get out.
That's right.
Both legislators and employees. So was the other effective date January 9, 1984? You didn't put an effective date in?
This is going to be a House joint resolution anyway.
You could in uniform rules. Couldn't you include it in the
That's right, yeah.
You could include it in the resolution, couldn't you?
Yes, you can.
We had a long discussion, Ken.
Okay. Any discussion? Any objections? Motion. Okay, all those in favor of the motion, signify by raising the right hand. All those opposed, 5-1, motion passes. Okay, what about the
red? 0-2-1.
Yeah. Okay, what about 030 and 040, 050, 060, and I think we pretty much discussed 070, 080. 150. Any interest in those sections?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Miller.
I move that this material be provided to the presiding officers of each house for consideration by a particular committee if turned into legislation if they desire. Or just make this research available to each house, and some members of that house or a committee in that house want to deal with it.
Are you saying that in the form of a bill, or just
no,
make them aware?
Just make them aware of our resources here.
Discussion? All those in favor of the motion, signify by raising your right hand. All those opposed? Motion passes. I'll have to get together with staff on that last motion.
Let me get something straight.
Senator Kelly.
Okay, we're done with that one, right?
Yes.
On the conflict of interest legislation, was the decision that the Ethics Commission be made up immediately and then everything else takes effect 90 days from now?
Okay, that the Senator Bates.
Can you go through the rationale for the effective dates?
Tim. The commission takes effect July 1st.
We were hoping to have the presiding officers point, the legislative members and the public.
And the rest is 90 days after.
We want to give them that time. Or if they appoint during the summer, then maybe some of the legwork can be done. We still have to confirm them. Nothing can go really into effect after the confirmation, so we're really worried about that January date. With the January date, we were afraid that nothing would get started next year and that we'd just flail around all sessions.
Right, I understand appointing the commission, but according to the way I read it, then everything goes into effect 90 days after the act takes effect. I think I've just lost me.
There's an immediate effective date on the commission and its duties, but the other sections which have to do with what a conflict of interest is and
90 days after.
What is prohibited conduct takes effect in 90 days.
And I, Senator Kelly, the vote was 4-1. You had two votes from the Senate, two from the House, and it didn't pass.
I guess you weren't here at the time. I think that the reasoning behind that was, first, that if we postpone this to next year, we still have all that startup process to go through. So we wanted to get the commission, if possible, it may not happen, we want to get the commission appointed and functioning before the next session, if that was possible. And the next problem that you raised was, how do people arrange their affairs to comply, because this is a new set of...
it's a new standard of conduct.
Standard of conduct. But I was one of those who, after thinking about it, argued, Mr. Barrier suggested that we just drop the effective date and allow 90 days, and I was one of those who argued for that on the basis that the same thing is true, say, of a civilian who enters the federal government, like Mr. Ruckel's house just did, and has to arrange his affairs, even though I'm not sure if they're sure. That you have much less time in order to do that, and that 90 days would be a reasonable time to allow that transition.
Show that the House has a bigger appetite than the Senate.
Okay, if we can turn to the draft on the uniform rules. Mr. Barrier could not make it tonight, so I'm going to do the best I can trying to explain some of these things. I'm not an attorney. I asked Mr. Barrier to go over all the rules back in March, mid-March, and then of course, each member received this packet listing all the rules and some of the problem areas. And then we went over it, meaning Mr. Barry and I went over it 2 weeks ago and picked out some rules that can be, from a practical as well as a political point of view, can be changed and still work in the legislature. So what I want to do is, if I can, go by rule by rule, either disapprove or approve the recommendation. And Mr. Bradley, if you can you help me out on this?
Yeah, I guess you can.
Legal stuff here.
Let me ask a question before we start. Were any of the recommendations of the NCSL included in this?
No. Wait, I haven't gotten the report.
That's the there's plenty of time to...
What I want to do is get this as a vehicle.
Okay.
There'll be plenty of time for the world to chop it up a bit and look at it and then put some more in. But I just need a vehicle for the uniform rules, and this is it. Now, there's an inherent political danger by just introducing this, because the legislature may later on change a rule that we don't want changed. It's a good rule. Anyway, let's deal with Rule 16A. And the only change here is on page 1, lines 16 and 17. You've taken words out, words when no quorum is present, and the word the, and inserting the word the. Okay. Uniform rules.
Page one.
Page one, line 16 to 17. You have a question?
What does it do?
I assume what it does, and I've not seen this before, but I assume that the question of a quorum is irrelevant to a call of the heads.
Is irrelevant?
It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
Awkward.
That's not the meaning that I have.
That's correct.
Does anybody have the rule?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason, this makes sense, now, it never occurred to me before, obviously we're taking out language that's in there right now, it doesn't make sense, because this implies that when a quorum is present, not in office, the House may not compel individuals. And, of course, that's certainly not neither what we want nor the spirit in which we've operated, but it's obviously made this change years ago, although there's never been a problem, because when everybody made a call in the House, the presiding officer has taken it upon himself to compel tenants. By telling Sergeant Ryan to line up.
We realize we're going to be here for another hour.
Gross.
Okay, well, I chair would entertain a motion for.
Move to approve.
Okay, any objection? Okay, the next rule changes on page two.
Mm-hmm. Wait, we didn't do section two.
Rule approval.
No. Mm-hmm. Object?
There's no change on page one.
I know.
We're still on section. We just started section two.
Just turn page two. You're still on section two.
I want to change in rule 21C.
All right. Okay, that's what I need to hear then. Okay. Senator Fakes.
Thank you. In line 21, this is a new uniform rule proposed by the Free Committee. Well, the Free Committee forgot something. The legislature now has to have a resolution passed for animals such as us to be in existence. Wait a minute. I think I might have just screwed up. But they don't have to pass a budget for the committee.
That's what I'm getting to.
You're getting to that?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
If you look at page two, lines two and three, we're inserting new language only if the expenditure is authorized by the majority vote of the full membership of the committee. And we're deleting the words in accordance with an appropriation made for the work of the committee.
Oh. Mr. Chairman, no, I didn't
Senator
mean
Fakes.
The committee. I wasn't worried about the committee expending money. I was worried about when these special committees, the proliferation of special committees are passed by resolution, you never know how much they're going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that final section of that rule catches that.
21C.
Believe me, it doesn't catch it.
All right. Then, Mr. Chairman, on page one, line 21, I'd like to insert the similar language, and this is concept in concept. The resolution establishing a special or joint committee shall specify the date, conditions, and of the committee. So I want to get the word budget in there. Specify the date, specify the budget, and the date or conditions of the termination of the committee.
Mr. Bradley, do you have that?
So actually, we should probably say budget and staff levels of the committee.
That's fine.
Well, I think the budget would establish the staff. You have $100,000, you might have more.
All you're going to get is $100,000, and you're not going to know how $100,000 is going to be spent. You know, and I think it might be interesting to note whether it's going to be spent on 8 staffers or. I think they should indicate in the special resolution how much staff is authorized for the committee.
Okay. Yes, I would move that, Mr. Chairman.
Any objections?
I just think about this.
Mr. Miller?
I wonder if that means you're going a little bit too far, because I don't know what you, when you form a committee, you don't even really know. You might have a budget, you might end up figuring it's going to take 2, but you might end up needing 3, and then you're stymied if you said 2 and you can't go beyond that. I think if we disclose the budget and the source of the funds, which he did in the House, this is the sticking point there. When we passed this bill, we thought that every budget, when that passage rule, we thought that every budget would carry with it a budget
right.
to vote on. Instead, as it's happened in the House, it's perfectly legal. It's just people don't like it. I mean, the minority doesn't like it. The source of the funds is actually the speaker slush fund. We say what the source is going to be, and then that's where they want to come from. That's fine. At least everybody's on notice where it's coming from.
Mr. Miller, how about if we just insert a fiscal note? The fiscal note will reveal the positions on there. That work?
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is not bind that committee too much. If they
can save a little bit on travel and want to spend it for one additional staff and need the staff, I don't think that'll bind me. I think it's all right,
budget.
Just budget. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And source of funds.
Okay. Okay. Budget and source of funds.
Budget and source of funds?
Budget and source of funds. Okay. Oh, budget including source of funds.
Okay.
You can turn to page 2, line 2. Discussion? I would entertain a motion. Marvin, this is like one of your big ones.
What's she doing?
I don't know. They have her moving. Yeah.
What are you
okay, in okay, in this okay, under this rule change, if this committee in the beginning when we met the first time, we could have just signed off on that contract, meaning face and I, without the committee's approval. This rule will say if the expenditure is authorized by a majority vote of the full membership of the committee, in other words, it would have taken 4 weeks to pass the budget and the contract.
I would move the change, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion?
I have.
Barbara?
I would just like to know how that would have handicapped you in the kind of ways and forced to do at the time that you didn't have.
Well, then again, we're trying to avoid the abuse of a chairman signing off on a contract you may not agree with as a committee member, you know.
It's not as efficient, but then, yeah, okay, I'll agree.
You know, I mean, we had a little discussion prior to that about the contract. But we did vote, we did have 4 votes, or we had 6 votes actually in this committee, and we did not have to bring it before the committee. Okay, any objections? Sorry. Okay. Rule 23.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kelly.
Doesn't this do away with our 5-day notice?
Yes.
Why do we want to do that? That's the one thing that forces you to call attention to when you're bringing a bill up. This works. The 5-day notice works.
Okay.
The thing that you're keeping is the thing that doesn't work.
Right.
It should be reversed. We've got to keep the 5-day notice and get rid of the 4 p.m. the preceding Thursday.
Okay. I want to just let you know, members of the committee, I am not the author of this. This is some of the things that some of the people and at least some of the House and Senate members brought up to my attention, and we're just
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, according to NCSL, the average number of times out there that the public, that a committee chair has to publish his agenda is 48 hours. And so their recommendation was that the written notice of the time, place, subject matter, meetings, and standing special, blah, blah, be published 48 hours in advance of that time of that meeting. Now, they liked the 5-day notice on the first public hearing, but they said that was a little excessive, too, that the average out there was from 2 to 3 days, was the average. Now, Pennsylvania has a 30-day notice required on all legislation dealing with a particular locale or county, a local legislation it's called, in Pennsylvania. But that's the most excessive anywhere in the United States. They thought that the reason this rule was cumbersome, the first part of this rule is cumbersome because the 4 o'clock on the preceding Thursday could never be waived. But legally, we do it, but it's not legal to do that. The 5-day notice could be waived, but the 4 o'clock Thursday thing couldn't. So I would say, in just for discussion purposes, we need at least 48 hours for the public to know what our agendas are, which is all we meant to do here, because this is another free committee rule. And that on a public notice, the public hearing process, there just be some advance notice when a committee is going to hear have a public hearing on a bill the first time out.
Mark.
The problem with that is that our newspapers are at least a day late from where most of our people live, and that is also true of the messages that leave this community.
Okay.
And we are so locked in when it comes to weather, and it would be my concern that we would not be getting the message to the community.
Okay. I don't have any trouble shifting the numbers around. My problem was with the 4 o'clock really gives the members of this legislature a hard time. Now, I think they're getting it. All it was a matter of organization. They just had to get used to it. But it could never be waived. Under the present rule, it could not be waived. And I think for political reasons, we would be doing ourselves a favor if we reworded the 4 o'clock of the preceding Thursday. That terminology really gets to them. And just as long as we can, I'm not set on the numbers at all or the time frame. I just wanted you to know what NCSL commented on. Well, I ask, I gave my conceptual.
What was your conceptual?
Restate that.
My conceptual notice was that the chairman of a committee announced the, have a written notice of the time, place, and subject matter of all meetings of the standing, special, joint committee, et cetera, at least 48 hours in advance was my conceptual notice. That could be waived with the membership, the majority membership of the body, and that the first public hearing on a bill have an extended period of advance notice. 5 days is what we've got, and I think that's a reasonable amount of time.
First hearing in each house, or just the
first committee?
First committee of referral.
In each body.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a departure from present.
Yeah, right now it's just the first one. Right. The first one in either body.
I don't care. I think we should know what we're doing.
Okay, for Mr. Well, Brett. Mr. Brett.
We are operating that in the Senate, though.
Hey, we got to give direction to Mr. Bradley. We're talking in concepts now. So,
what happens in the special session?
Rules apply. Rules apply.
Does that mean we would have to have 10 days in the special session? You'd have to have 5 days notice in the first.
Okay,
body,
if you
5 days.
Oh, excuse me.
A through C do not apply during.
Yeah,
the special
I'm wrong. Special session does not apply. Sorry.
Well, except that's.
Provisions of A, if you look on page 3, line 14, provisions of A through C, this rule do not apply in meetings of, and if you look under paragraph 3, it says, or during special session, that's what we're adding. We're adding a new language in that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really question the 5-day requirement in the second house, because we're going to be in a situation right now where we get a lot of bills transferred from one body to the next, and we're going to have a...
Okay, I didn't realize how that was working out. That's fine. First house, the first
first house.
Yeah, I would move Jan Smith.
Okay, Jan, for the purpose of Mr. Bradley, I don't think you got it. The state is slow.
Before I move it, could we talk about the amount of time? Is 48 hours enough time to publish an agenda for chairman? Is that unruly? Is that a difficult?
I have no problem with this. The second house and the second time.
Okay. From your experiences.
Then,
10th?
Yeah, and the second, and then the first hearing is 5 days.
Right, 5 days public notice on the first hearing of a bill.
And you can waive either or both of them.
That's the unruly part. You must be able to waive, the majority must be able to waive either one on the floor.
Well, the important thing is somebody stands up and says, hey.
Okay, now what about the 4 o'clock Thursday?
Scratch it.
Okay. Madam Chair, well, Senator Fakes, why don't you?
My conceptual motion for Rule 23 on page 2 is as follows. Strike out Section A. Replace Section A with a two-part rule. I don't think these, and I'm going to get off my motion, but I don't think these two standards should be in the same paragraph. I think they need to be separated. So Section A would be that written notice of the time, place, and subject matter of all meetings of standing, special, and joint committees during a week, and that's an optional phrase, shall be provided by the person who chairs the committee to the chief clerk or secretary at least 48 hours in advance of that meeting.
So what you've taken out is by 4 o'clock.
Right, on the preceding Thursday.
And replace it with 48 hours notice.
Right. However, this requirement may be waived by motion of the person who chairs the committee if concurred in by the majority vote of the full membership of the House. And then, subsection B. And you can keep in there, the chief clerk and secretary shall publish and distribute copies of the weekly scheduled committee meetings. You know that. Okay, then the second part of that chapter should be the
written notice
of the first public hearing of a bill shall be provided to the chief clerk or secretary and published at least 5 days in advance of that public hearing. And we want to be
sure. Anywhere because I'm not writing this fast as you're talking.
Okay, it's page 2 basically.
Oh, I didn't realize you were reading.
Well, I'm not, but the concept is there.
Yeah, that's where I'm concerned about it.
Okay. You got the first part.
I think 48 hours. 48 hours, right.
The next is the first public hearing on a bill.
Right.
You need at least 5 days notice on that. And the key part here is that only in the first house of referral.
All right.
And the first committee of referral. Well, that's understood.
That second part is understood, doesn't need to be stated?
I would assume so. I'd have to see it written out, but I would think that would be fine. You might say the first committee of referral of a bill in its...
Hurry. You're going to lose them here.
Why?
I'm getting tired.
Once we get beyond this, I think it'll be easy.
And then that also can be waived if the chairman of the committee stands up and asks for a majority vote on the floor.
Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Larkin.
I think maybe Mr. Bradley can relax a little bit if he realizes that we are on tape, Mr. Bradley. So
all right. Yes, I may need it.
Mr. Miller.
I think we want to say that the requirements of this rule may be sort of clear if you can waive both provisions.
Yes.
Within the waiver, or especially the other waiver. So I motion the person who chairs the committee, concurred in by majority vote.
Now you
just
have to cover the
No, I covered A, but A will have to have two sections in it. I have not covered section B on page 2.
Any changes there?
Chairman.
Mr. Miller.
When we solve the problem, we did create another. In the process of what we just did, which I concur with, we have totally now negated the rule that calls for the, even to be a weekly schedule committee meeting.
So we want to have.
And.
You want to keep it?
Well, I think Chairman should, to the best of their ability, continue to turn in their things by Thursday noon, and to the best of their ability, they should do that, and the clerk should probably try to publish a weekly schedule, because I think it's useful. And 99% of the time, you know, a good fiscal okay, but I'm not quite sure how to phrase the. I can't really well say the Chairman really ought to.
How about this rule is in no way meant to restrict?
They'll throw that out as soon as they have the opportunity because they hate it. I don't understand why it's so objectionable to have your agenda for your preceding week's schedule turned in to the chief clerk by Thursday at 4 o'clock. And if you have an exception to that, then you provide 48 hours notice and ask for majority.
Yeah, or we could even say written notice.
For a tentative agenda.
For a tentative agenda, yeah. For the time, place, and secondary of all meetings. So we should be provided by 4 o'clock. And again, in that case, the 110th agenda will be the agenda. And for purposes here, again, Travis Clinton and everything else would be just as useful as the other ones.
Hey, Jane, you go home.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I'm a committee chairman. I don't have any problem with the 4 p.m. rule. My aide comes to me and says, hey, it's that time of the week. We do it. It doesn't take that
long. Do you have a problem with that?
What? The only problem with it is if you have a public need to have a hearing on a bill that you just got, say, from another body, you can apply it from another body, but just about introduced, maybe a supplemental bill to keep the legislature alive or something like that. Here we've got this rule, and you can't even waive it. So just, you know, every once in a while, but it's not the time. Again, it's no problem at all.
I think I got it. Why don't we just reword it a little so it's not so awkward, and then put the thing in there that this can be waived?
5-day rule?
No, the 5-day rule already can be waived. It's the 4 p.m. Thursday that cannot be waived, getting your agenda in. So maybe what we should do. That would solve the problem.
Well, yeah, leave the rule exactly as it is right now. Instead, they'll say, however, the requirements of this rule.
That's
may
right.
Be waived.
The entire rule. Right.
Yeah. And then it's no
very
slack.
Good.
How about a motion?
I'll leave that.
No, go ahead.
I'll just so move. But maybe we keep the
Vic, did you get that?
Very good. Huh?
You're leaving 23A the way it is?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No deletions, except we would add the phrase, however,
the requirements of this
of this rule.
And do you mean by that 23A or do you mean 23?
Well, what's the balance of 23? Well, 23A, I guess we better say.
Right. But it still should be separated, Mr. Bradley. There are two distinct rules in this one section, and they should be separated out.
All right, now you've lost me again.
Now, Mr. Bradley, look at me. Okay, now there are two concepts. No, there are two. We work with this every day, and you know, it's not fair. There are two concepts in this rule. One is the 4 p.m. Thursday business.
All right.
And the other is 5 days for public hearing.
First committee.
They need to be split up so that there's only. See, legislators are very simple people, and we can only have one thought or idea per paragraph.
And even then we screw it up.
Yeah, and this one has got two thoughts in one paragraph, and we cannot handle it. It's very confusing to us. Now, the other problem, sir,
yes,
is that we can't waive the first part of the rule, and we can waive by majority vote the second part of the rule. We want to be able to waive both parts of the rule.
And that's achieved by simply changing the material at line six.
Yes.
Of this subsection.
Right. But remember, we want to split the two ideas up.
All rules are meant to be waived.
I don't know. Under certain circumstances.
By concurrent resolution.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Of course.
Thank you.
Let's move on.
It's like I have a crab today.
How about C on page 3? On line 3, we have, after the word cancel, or consideration of the scheduled subject matter may be postponed or canceled at any time.
Move to approve.
Any objections? Okay. Now on page 3, line 7, it's suggested that we delete D.
Why are we doing that?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Because because you run out of time, right?
Yeah. Provisions A and B of this rule does not apply to this.
No. What this was supposed to be is that once the conference committee went into the budget, then provisions A through B did not apply because you were in the 2-week crunch, supposedly. So why are we eliminating
it? Yeah, it seems legitimate to me.
Yeah.
In fact, of course, we never...
It's repeated. The substance of it is carried down below, isn't it?
Or maybe it's rephrased.
I don't think so.
Yeah. There's a new... D is taken out. Would that mean that E would be re-lettered, Richard?
I have a dense three-page memorandum.
Okay.
I am not managing
the provisions... Here. The exclusions would have are listed under E anyway. Okay.
Here, this is on page 3. This is what we're working from.
I know where you're working. I got the bill, but I got Barry's memo too, and that's what I don't understand.
Mr. I'm going to move it.
Delete D.
I mean, delete what D does. I'm not quite sure strictly how we do it. I guess we just
discussion. Objections.
Well,
why are we deleting it?
I don't know. No, when I say delete, when I say delete, I mean we delete
it,
treating it, dealing with it.
Oh, good.
In other
good.
Words, I'll leave it in the rules.
Oh, yes, very good. I agree.
Yeah. We didn't say that.
Okay.
Rules Commission had another look at this anyway.
So yeah. Okay, on line 14 of page 3. Oh boy. Then we run it?
We all understand that, I think, Randy.
Okay.
It's only
during special session.
That picks up.
Yeah. The provisions of A through D. The provisions of A through. No, object.
Okay.
Section 3 of E has a mistake in it. Standing, special, or joint committees of this whole, the rule does not apply, standing, special, or joint committees when the committees meet during a special session. But I think the public should know or be given the opportunity to know when the standing, special, or joint committees meet during the interim.
We can't do the Thursday rule.
No.
Yes. If you look at E, it says provisions A through C, and this rule does not apply to meetings of...
Right.
But see, A has got the previous Thursday rule in there.
Right.
And during the interim, there isn't any previous Thursday.
Oh.
Well.
So that's the thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that looks good.
Can we put the 5-day rule in there then?
No.
Where would you publish the information?
Public notice newspapers, just like you do in
legislative affairs.
We don't have any publication.
No.
I mean,
Mr. Chairman, let me try and reassure my friend from South Anchorage.
It's going to be tough.
There is no motive during an interim to try to move something through quickly without the public attention. In fact, the opposite occurs where the legislators are trying to get as much attention for themselves as possible.
Okay.
So I don't think
so. The only thing we're adding here.
I hear that anyway. I personally.
Or during special session.
We've never served on one of those sessions.
Any objections? Motion passes.
It was just been my, was my experience when I was running around following the Budget and Audit Committee meeting that a certain representative from Juneau did his utmost best not to ever let us know exactly when the meeting was meeting very much in advance.
Did he wear glasses?
No, he didn't. Nor did he have a beard.
Oh.
On page 4, paragraph 4, the only word changed there is we're deleting the words may and shall, and I think.
Move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any objections? Motion passes. Rule 31.
Yeah, I object to that.
Okay.
I think the opportunity to rescind after reconsideration is what rescinding is all about and serves sometimes a very good purpose because it has to be done when the matter is still in the possession of the body, so there's a limited time frame. But sometimes a mistake is made or information is coming in, and why we would want to tie our hands and not allow us to.
I can recall one occasion when President Senate had to write a letter to the governor asking to return the bill. So if the Senate could rescind, fail to concur, and then bring it back to the House, I mean, it was a long, involved thing, but if we had not been able to rescind, I forget what catastrophic event would have occurred, but it was going to be a real mess.
Chairman, I move we delete Section 4.
Or we'll just leave the way it is.
Consideration.
I hear you. On page 5, lines or rule 37, we're adding a new section C completely to the uniform rules.
I have a situation very much like this that's in mind.
Okay.
Where I may want to do a sponsor substitute for a bill where I have co-sponsors.
Right.
This would permit me to put the sponsor substitute in without telling my co-sponsors. Because my name is first on the list, and I have some question about that.
Senator Walker?
Yes, I agree with Senator Josephson that we should not approve C section 5.
Well, wait a minute, though.
Senator Kelly.
Isn't there a question as to when you can do a sponsor substitute? I mean, is there a rule right now that says it's got to be in the committee of first referral, or it could be any time when the bill's anywhere, or
very vague.
Yeah. So it should be spelled out, but then we should take care of the problem with the sponsors.
Well, that's I would say, you know, may with the consent of the co-sponsors introduce a sponsor substitute, but it could be very mischievous if a colleague asks you to co-sponsor a bill, then he goes out and changes the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You're left.
You're stuck with it.
Okay.
There should be language in there that each sponsor is able to reconsider his sponsorship of the bill.
They can do that now. Change the bill without telling the buddies.
Yeah, they can do it now. So, you know. Yes.
Mr. Berry, the reason he stuck this in was because there were some questions that came up that our office asked for relation to sponsor substitutes, and he simply wanted to insert something, not change anything from the present procedures, but just put something in there from rules to talk about sponsor substitutes.
Okay.
And this is what he came up with, in my recollection.
Yeah, I think that with the consent members.
I like with the consent.
With the consent of co-sponsors.
Okay. Mr. Bradley, okay. Any objections to that, with the consent?
Move Section 5 as a...
With no objection. Motion passes. Now, if you look at page 6, lines 4 and 6.
I would move the amendment. Yes.
Any objections?
What is it to?
That's clarifying.
It was just clarifying.
Yeah.
As opposed to a joint committee.
Right.
Oh, I see.
On 50 too, then are we just saying that you don't have to get a concurrent resolution to adjourn or what?
Okay. Well, let me just, we had a motion before on the previous rule change. Do I hear any objection? Okay, the motion passes. To answer your question, legally we're supposed to be doing that, but in practice we don't. So all we're doing is, Mr. Miller.
I don't know how to do it, but rather than going in this direction, I would rather try, let's use our creative juices or something and try to figure out some way that we could go back to having current resolutions. Right now, the adjournment is the most disorderly ridiculous thing that we do. It's a race. See which house can dump their version of something or other on the other house and get out first. So that the other house then is kind of stuck with either, you know, eating what they're given to them, or else, if it's serious enough, forcing the other house back. I mean, it's just a real mess. And if we followed the rule of concurrent resolution, neither house could adjourn without the consent of the other.
So all you do is you dump your, the last thing you do before you go home is dump your concurrent resolution to the other body and leave.
Well, but the concurrent resolution would not have passed until it's been concurred in by both bodies. And the I say it's a problem. I don't know how you force that to happen, but it's a real mess right now. And maybe I'm concerned because more often than not, the House has been the foil of the thing. But the House has scored a couple of times, too, and the Senate has been less than enthusiastic about the process. So if we could figure out some way to make our closings orderly, I mean, with just a degree of
dignity.
Dignity, yeah. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous that we don't even do the thing of sending another committee because there's no other house to send the committee to. You know. Everybody just leaves. I don't know what the solution is because it's in the middle now, it's being disregarded. But it's in, I did some research on this last year, and more times than not, we have used a concurrent resolution as a process for doing it. But in fact, in the early in statehood, they used long, flowing resolutions. Were really kind of fun to read because they patted themselves on the back, place where their arms got sore. But and then finally, they stopped using it. It was just an adjournment. Anyway, that's my thought.
We got anything creative?
Well, I haven't yet. Maybe I'll have to think about it.
Why don't we bring it back? Why don't we just delete Rule 52 and see what happens? Somebody might come up with something before. Gets very far.
Well, I'd rather not do that. So.
Well, I think why don't we just leave it
the way it is.
Leave it. And when we go before the committees and testify, if in fact we can mention that.
No, but wait a minute, though. We delete by the adoption of the concurrent resolution, then it's gone. Then when we're testifying, it's not there in this particular bill that we look at. If we leave it, though, well, oh, I see what you mean. If we leave it, then we can't talk about it, basically.
I won't.
Okay. All right.
Okay, I don't hear a motion, so we'll just leave Rule 52 the way it is. Page 6, line 22, the words other than rule concerning...
I don't understand that. What does that mean?
Mr. Bradley, help.
Oh, up 22?
Well,
I think that it would mean this, that, for example, in the House coup of 1981, you could not have the senators get up and say, well, we're not going to deal with their bills because they shouldn't have had a coup. That's
what it does.
Right. Okay. Mentally, I was too tired. Do I hear a motion on that?
I move to approve.
Any objections? Motion passed. We have one more here.
What is it?
Well, it's dealing with the minority.
Well, that language is so vague.
I have other language.
Mr. Josephson.
It doesn't matter which way you want to go or not. It's just clear to me.
But I don't think it's going to satisfy my copy. would say that in cases in which the body is not organized by political parties, a minority is a group of members consisting of at least one-fourth of the membership of the body who have publicly declared themselves to be a group, caucus, or faction for organizational purposes prior to the last legislative election and who are not members of the majority. And my rationale for this, which takes a bit of the discussion that we had.
Prior to the last election?
Yes. My argument for that is that in the situation
No.
There's a very sound rationale for it. I beg your pardon. The rationale is this, that if there was a group of legislators, such as hypothetically Senator Kelly and Senator Rody and Senator Sturgeon Whiskey, Alfred Pettyjohn,
hypothetically,
and if they had gone to their districts and said, if you elect us, we intend to organize the Senate if there are enough of us in our number, or we intend to be the loyal opposition of the Senate, then I think they should be recognized as a minority for purposes of organization. Because that becomes almost a question, I don't like to use the term proportion of representation, but that becomes a question of representing the people's will. The problem is presented when, after an election is over with, when you elect Republicans and Democrats without a clue that there is going to be that kind of a coalition. A coalition is formed either out of reasons of high moral principle or opportunism, as the case may be, and you come together and say, treat us as a minority, and the voters never knew that that was an eventuality that they could look forward to. That's where we have a difference of opinion. So that's the other possibility. The other possibility would be to use language that says that so far as practicable, all committees will reflect the makeup of the body geographically, philosophically, by party. Well, we can
ignore it.
Do we? Did we ignore it? Well, we.
I have a better one.
Go ahead.
Must organize along party lines. How about that? Don't allow it at the end.
What happens when you're 10-10, which has happened more times than not in the Senate?
Well, yeah, Barbara.
I know. That would be.
I like the 25%.
That's
just before the elections.
I know, that's a little.
Because
hard.
You don't know who's going to win the election.
That's right.
No, and I don't want to line up with anybody before election, generally. Okay. I like the 25%. I'll go for the 25%.
This amendment?
You meet me halfway.
Yeah. I'd take out the
Well, I'm satisfied with the rule as it is. I feel it's correctly interpreted. I think it's fair. But in
me
the interest
too,
of avoiding confusion in the future, I'm trying
Mr.
to come
Chairman,
up.
How is
Barbara.
The public best served in the organization of these houses? I think
straight.
That's really what
so
we're trying to
election.
Do. How is the public best served?
And you got me and Sturgeon Whiskey and Alfred Pettyjohn.
That's a good point.
Maybe Fakes. All saying, we're going to organize the Senate. Now, what's Justin going to do?
If
he gets elected, we're going to organize the lawmakers. Now, what's Justin going to do if he gets elected? You've got to make a statement.
No. Let's take that. I'm glad you raised that, okay? In 1984, if the people who treat themselves as a minority today in the Senate issue a joint statement to the voters of Alaska or their district saying, my district, I'm here. We love each other, and we hope to augment our numbers, but we are a group, Republicans and Democrats. And we want to keep what we've got. Some of us have 4-year terms, some of us 2-year terms. And we urge you to vote for so-and-so and so-and-so. But we are going to try and make the Senate work as a team, and whether we're in the majority or minority. Then I think, and let's say we come back and we have the same 20 folks with the same alignment. Then I think, under my rule, you would be entitled to a seat on the Finance Committee. Because you would have gone to the people with that understanding and that covenant. Okay?
You're crazy.
Yeah.
Barbara?
Yes, I would say to you, Senator Josephson, that that's basically what the public perceives from us when we run in a primary and there's Democrats and Republicans running. They really do perceive that if they get 21 in the House, either party, that's who will do it. And they perceive that in the Senate. So,
yeah.
Actually what we do is
You're right, absolutely right. I agree with you that I prefer party organization where I'm in.
Where it's possible.
And the second thing is that in the Senate Finance Committee, which is where the only issue has been presented, we do have Republicans and Democrats, and this is the majority leader of the Senate. So,
yeah, I know. It's too bad we have a situation where we have to even worry about it. But, you know, truly that is the perception of the public.
I agree.
That you have two parties running, and that's what the primary does. And when they elect you, they truly do expect that.
That's right, and that's my point. That's
so how can we say that
okay.
here?
Okay, well, from my point of view, you're right, and that's the rub, that the public has that expectation. Then, after the election is over, a group says, we want to organize the Senate, another group wants to organize the Senate of both parties. Then the losing group comes forward and says, treat us as a minority, even though we didn't tell the public we were in league with each other. That's my concern.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that...